On this program, Brenda Dunn, Della Keats, and James Patlin talk about natives and family planning. I'm Mo Osley, and welcome to Potlatch. A family planning workshop for Native Alaskans was recently held at Anchorage. Brenda Dunn of the Seattle Indian Center, who coordinated the workshop, gave a talk on customs of Indian tribes in childbirth and the concepts of reproduction.
The Native people of the North American continent once knew a time when horizons were not cluttered with tall buildings rising into the sky or electrical wires which obstructed the view of the sunrise, for their lifestyle was determined by the conditions of the earth from which they came and from which their nourishment came and to which they in turn nourished. Individuals experienced their lives together in small groups in which every individual was considered significant and worthy of the role he or she played as a member of the tribe. Population control did not constitute a problem. Yet in many tribes, children were spaced for such reasons as the availability of food or the health of the mother. Herbs and roots were used among some of the southwestern or Mexican tribes for purposes of contraception as well as fertility. Research even indicates that an IUD-type device was made from salmon bone by some of the Pacific Northwestern tribes. In North American Indian and Native Alaskan healthcare systems, the care of the pregnant woman was the responsibility of the midwife, who provided a humanistic approach to maternal child care through the use of such techniques as sweat bathing, massage, and natural herbs. Today, we classify these practices as esoteric. Native American children were born away from bright lights, away from the smell of antiseptics, and first touched by human skin as opposed to plastic-covered hands. The trauma of birth was a fact instinctively accepted by the native. Consequently, the infant was provided with a womb-like environment, such as being wrapped in a blanket and rocked in a cradle to help him or her adapt more comfortably to the new environment. All infants, except in unusual physical circumstances, were breastfed. The child's need for oral stimulation did not end by Dr. Spock's advice on how early weaning should take place. The child made that decision. As a result, there were no oral addictions in adults, such as cigarettes, coffee, sugar, alcohol, or anything else advertising deems appropriate to put in our mouths. Many psychologists are now discovering the devastating emotional effects of early weaning. In discussing the causes of adult depression, frustration, anger, and a sense of loss, Dr. Alexander Lowen states that infants whose access to the mother's breast is regulated by their own need and desire do not develop uncontrollably greedy and destructive impulses toward this source of pleasure. The most important aspect of the Native American lifestyle that relates to what we now define as family planning is the validation of the individual sexual being, the recognition of womanhood or manhood was a basic attribute of tribal life. In the form of puberty rites, young girls and boys were communicated the importance of their roles as potential creators of human form. The concept of reproduction was not only a physical reality, but also constituted a spiritual recognition of the continuation of life.
Thank you. the highway. Thought I've done so much wrong. Please give me strength to carry on. Dear Lord, give me strength.
Society's recognition of the sacredness of native sexuality has been shattered. Its early destruction began with the conquest of native land by white men who rationalized their invasion by calling it discovery and exploration. The small number of natives who survived the white men's bullets and diseases are now controlled by bureaucratic institutions which took away the freedoms and the truths they once knew as a proud nation. And now the puberty rites, the system of midwifery, the humanistic system of infant delivery, and the recognition of a whole concept of sexuality are gone. For the religion and the healthcare system of native peoples were defined as primitive by their captors. And only the white man had knowledge of the medicine necessary to cure the diseases he had brought with him. The purpose of this conference is not to agitate hostility among natives toward whites, nor is it intended to increase feelings of guilt in white people for the past. We cannot alter the path their ancestors took. And many of us who are called mixed breeds would be blaming one ancestor for doing harm to another ancestor. But there is one thing we can do that they failed to do. That is to finally accept the historical reality of our present situation. How does this historical reality affect us? If you think that natives are not carrying around the burden of a wounded and captive nation, watch some of your clients carefully. Notice the despondency, the unwillingness to assert self, the fear and the anger written on their faces. Whites are equally endowed with a burden of guilt for the destruction of other cultures. One of the ways that we deal with the guilt that we harbor within us is through the defense mechanism of denial. Many whites who provide health care to natives will be the first to tell you that there are no problems. But we have all got to confront the prejudices hidden within us. Those prejudices that continue to eat our souls and make our lives on this planet a chore, not a joy, as it could be. Once we learn not to be ashamed of the most negative feeling that we have toward one another, we can begin to rid ourselves of these prejudices. And then together we can join in peace and mutual concern for the wholesome survival of human life. And once we join together, we can begin creating a culturally sensitive atmosphere in our family planning clinics. Once we join together, whites will be giving natives support in their efforts to control their own healthcare systems. And perhaps we can even gather together the important knowledge that both healthcare systems have in order to provide efficient and humanistic healthcare to all people.
Brenda Dunn. Della Keats of Kotzebue attended a conference and related her experiences in helping her people. She tells of school and how things were in the old days.
when I was 9, 10 years old in school, the teachers want me to take out, and I cry and cry when they told me to take me out states to school. But my parents don't want me to, so I get so disappointed. Why you cry for? I want to learn how to talk English. Yes, I never been in school. I get into 8th grade, all right. But they never give me a graduate card, you know, certificates when I'm in school. When I first start school, when I was around 6 years old, I guess, 1912. We have no tablets to write. We have no pencil to write. We use slate, rocks, and we use a nail for pencil, easy to erase. So I would have, maybe I would have filed some of it, what I learned when I was a kid. Too bad I didn't know, I never find out. Tried to keep first books what I've learned. Even I never been in school training for nurse or doctors. They call me a doctor, medicine doctor, Della Keats, right now. I never trained, I never been in school how to be a doctor. So then when they call me to teach the health aides in Nome area and Kotzebue area, I always teach them just from my experience. When a people need help, I have to help. So then when I have a little money from a different villages, when they call me, I have to go. I have to pay with my last money, to use all my last money to help the people. I never think of what I used my money for, helping the people. Sometimes they always take me home from other villages, from nearest villages, by dog team. And right now, when they have no dogs, they use no go. Or take me to the other villages. I always work on every joints, everything on the body, but I can't operate the people, because I have no outfits to. But when a people, but when I knew that a person have a pus someplace in the body, I always open it and drain it. I save a lot of people from my coffin. It's only I'm gonna say something about my how they always delivered the baby long ago. Good thing I asked my mother about it. I asked my mother where I was born. She told me around 4 miles off from Notak village in a hut, a moss hut. In a room? No. Your daddy make a little house for me to deliver you. Was it have stove? No, no stove. How did you get warm then? My old dad warm a rocks, make it real hot, and put it on wood, and put it in a little room, enough for me to born, you know, warm, and a little moss, little hut, it get warm. Somebody help you then? There's nobody help me. I deliver you myself. No trouble? She said no trouble. How did you deliver me, lay or how? She just say that she kneeled. What did you have for bedding? She say caribou skins. When I was born, how did you clean me? You wipe me or something like that? She say she cleaned me with some kind of thin caribou skin and breastfeed right away. How did you cut my cord then? With ulu? And how did you wrap it? Tie the cord. She said, twist a sinew. No bend around? No bend. How did you clean it and how did you keep it? She said, when she just cut my cord, after tie it up with sinew, cut it with ulu too. Maybe it's not clean or, you know, good thing it never infect. Cause she put old dry willow, dead willow, and she use it, the ashes, for powder. Powder it on my cord. And just let it go, but she said she watched me careful from infection. That is how they always deliver the baby old days. That is how I always proud of my mother, especially when I have my birthday. I always think of my mother, how I deliver. And I always be proud of her, that she kept me careful.
Della Keats. On our final segment, James Pollan, a Pomo Indian from California, explains some customs of the Indians in the cycle of life and instructions on how boys became men.
Before a young man even thinks about becoming a father to any woman in his tribe, the people teach them, well, my people teach us, myself, I was instructed. When I was real young, at about 6 years old, they taught us in four parts. First, they told us about the respect for the earth. You know, I mean, we're here and we're stepping on the ground, and we have to respect that and all the living creatures that are around us, our brothers. And they won't go on. They won't let us hunt. They won't let us fish. They won't let us make our song until we learn to respect the earth. Now, they still do this. our tribe is real small, only 3,500 people. That's approximately maybe 25,000 square miles of land and only 3,500 people. They tell us that we should marry our own tribe so we can make our people strong again. But nowadays, the school, the fast cars, all the glamour take all the young men from the reservation and they go to the town, and sometimes they mess up pretty bad. But after they teach us about how to go with the way the world is, you know, they tell us about women. What they told me and what I believe yet is that no machine, no government, nothing can duplicate life like a woman can. And only a woman can make a human baby, you know. It takes a man to help for sure, but inside the woman's stomach, all of this takes place. So most of the young guys, when they hear this, they look at women as, oh no, you know, gee. You know, all this power, you know, we're confronted with. How do we handle it? And then after they instruct us and tell us these things, and most of the time they teach us this in the sweat lodge, you know, all the young men go in, they sit around and talk to the old people, and the old people talk to the young. Then they tell us about how to hunt, how to make a song, how to make power, how to track. And they tell us that we have to know this, because if we're going to have children, we have to teach our children how. We have to know how to be a man, so that way we can provide good for the woman and for the children and make our tribe really strong. One of the most hardest part about planning a family, Indian ways down on the reservation, is that before we can marry a woman or even think about having any type of intimate relations, we have to first prove ourselves to the girl's family. Well, just the last marriage they had, and about a half a year ago, what I understand, this guy had to climb a mountain to bring back a certain kind of quartz rock from an inactive volcano, and he was gone for a couple of months. When he came back, he did have that certain color rock. It was a pink, I forget the geological term, but it was some kind of pink quartz that supposedly is a charm now for his child. Now he had to do this. He had to make wedding rings for his wife and for himself. Now I don't know if the people up here have wedding rings, but they used to weave them out of roots and inlay them with abalone shell and clam shell. It's just what our people use for money. And the man would make one and the woman would make one. And when the two came for the ceremony, they would hook them together like this. And you couldn't come apart, then they would tie it. So that way, if it was ever broken, that means the marriage is not working, you know, it's gone. A lot of the social customs, dances, when a man has a child in the woman's stomach, he has to leave the reservation. We have a place we call Rattlesnake Island, which is, maybe half a mile across the lake in the middle of it. And the man and his friends go there and stay while the woman is getting ready to have birth to the child. Now he can't, when he gets up in the morning, he has to face to the east. He can't eat anything except dried meat. And sometimes he can't eat that unless it's been doctored. He can't smoke, no tobaccos, no nothing. He can't think of any other kind of lady or his mom or nothing like that. All he has to think is just himself. He has to kind of build a power inside him so he could be ready to be a good father. It's a very major step for us.
Mm-hmm. reach that glory road. One more mountain to climb, one more river to cross. I've come such a long, long way, still got a long way to go. Weary all the time, I've been tumbled and tossed. There's always one more mountain to climb and one more river to cross. But a woman, I try to do the best I can. And sometimes the road is hard to see. Oh, oh, please, love, won't you walk with me?
I'm Mo Wasley, and thank you for listening to Potlatch.
Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.